Begin by reminding some things about classical and quantum cohomology. And this is going to be the main motivation for the equivariant quantum cohomology, which I'm going to define later. So, what's the title? Equivariant quantum Schubert calculus. I will begin by fixing a homogeneous space. So X is going to be G mod P, where G is a complex connected semi-simple Lie group, and I have Borel in it, which sits in a parabolic, which sits in G. Okay, and for this associated to this construction, I have the set of simple roots. So delta is going to denote the set of simple roots, alpha 1 up to alpha, say, L. So these are the simple, positive simple roots. And the Weyl group, so this is just to fix some notations at the beginning. So the Weyl group is generated by the reflections indexed by the positive simple roots. So that's alpha I, alpha in delta. Okay. And now for P, I have so P determines a subset of delta, which is going to be denoted delta P, and also determines a subgroup of W, which I'm going to denote by WP, and this WP is essentially generated by the reflections in delta P. I'm not going to insist too much on this. I just want to recall the definition of the Schubert variety. So, shoot. Okay. So, one more definition. So, W upper P is going to denote the set of minimal length representatives for W over WP. Okay? So I have this coset. For each coset, I can find a representative which has minimal length, and the set of such representatives is going to be denoted by WP. Okay? And then for W in WP, I will define the Schubert variety. So everything was seen before, but just want to fix notation. So X of W to be, well, the B orbit if you want, or the U orbit, doesn't matter. And so I'm taking the closure of that cell over there. And this has dimension the length of W, and it determines the class in cohomology. And this class is in degree, everything is with Z coefficients here. C of W, where C of W is the dimension of X minus the length of V, of W. Okay, can you see? Okay, so then the classical cohomology of X. Classical cohomology. In fact, I already said something about it. So first of all, I'm going to say that H upper star X of Z is a Z algebra which has a Z basis indexed by these elements in W upper P. Okay, and the multiplication. So if you take two basis elements, and if you multiply them, you get these famous generalized Lie Richardson numbers. So these are positive, non-negative integers, in fact. Okay? I'm not writing it down, but they count a number of points in the general translates of Schubert variety X of U, X of V, and the Schubert variety, the dual Schubert variety associated to W. So it's going to be X of, in fact, W, 0, W. Okay. But really, the main interest for me is the quantum cohomology of a homogeneous space. So this is what I'm going to do in what follows. In order to define what the quantum cohomology is, I have to introduce a little bit more notation, so just bear a little bit with me. So a degree in, well, so degree is going to be in cohomology in degree 2, so it's going to be the class of a curve. So degree really corresponds to a sequence d, say, alpha I, where alpha I are in delta minus delta p. So what is a degree? The degree is a non-negative combination of Schubert curves. Okay. Now a non-negative combination of Schubert curves really is the same thing as some integers which are indexed by the Schubert curves. Okay. Now the Schubert curves are really indexed by this positive simple roots which are not in delta p. Okay. So I identify the degree with a bunch of non-negative integers. So d alpha I is going to be in D plus. Okay? So then the quantum cohomology okay. In fact, before the quantum cohomology I'm going to have, okay, so that was the degree. Now I have a sequence of formal variables which are also indexed by the curves, by the Schubert curves in X. So Q is going to be a sequence Q alpha I indexed by the same thing as the degree, alpha in delta minus delta p. Q, alpha, I are formal variables. You can give them a degree. I'm not going to say what the degree is. There is a precise formula for it. Okay. Oh, Q alpha. Yeah. Yes. Thank you. Q alpha. Okay. And I'm going to use this notation. Q to the D will mean really Q alpha I to D alpha I. Okay? Where alpha I varies over delta minus delta P. Okay? So then quantum cohomology which I denote or we denote the classical notation by QH upper star of X is going to be a Z of Q algebra. In fact, it's going to be a graded Z of Q algebra. So remember, Q is in fact a sequence of variables. Okay, and which has, so having a Z of Q basis, which is indexed in the same way as the usual Schubert basis, so sigma W, where W is in W upper P. Okay. So now I told you what is the additive structure of the quantum cohomology. But really, what's important here is the multiplicative structure of quantum cohomology. So I have a multiplication. And this multiplication is determined by the Gromov-Witten invariant. Okay. Oh, maybe that's not a good idea. Let's write it. So sigma U times sigma V is equal with the sum over D and W. So D is a degree and W runs over W upper P. Now it's going to be U to the D, the Gromov-Witten coefficient CUV WD, sigma W. And I'm going to tell you a little bit more about this. So where CUVWD is the Gromov-Witten invariant. In fact, Okay? And is in fact a positive integer, so it's a non-negative integer, is equal with a number of rational curves of degree d passing through Schubert varieties through general translates, in fact, general translates of x of u, x of v, and x of, okay, w check. So w check, what is w check? W check is really, w check is the representative of w0, w, where w0 is the longest element in the Weyl group, okay? Of course, there is a definition for this Gromov-Witten invariant which involves the moduli space of stable maps. I'm not going to give that definition because one has to introduce this and one. Well, I mean, it's a degree D curve. Okay, so you have a map from P1 with 3 fixed points to X. And what you want is that, now you take the direct image of the P1, and you want that this class has degree D. So this is going to be some curve class in X, and you want those two classes to be equal. So. Okay? Yes? No? Okay. So it's really a multi-degree. I mean, for example, in type A, this G mod P is in fact a partial flag manifold, and D is a multi-degree. So you have some projections in each to some Grassmannians, and each such projection is going to give you a degree. Okay? Okay. So of course the main question here is to compute this Gromov-Witten invariant. So we want to compute this invariant. There are some algorithms. So these are going to be some special Gromov-Witten invariants. They're not going to be the general ones. These are just 3-point genus zero Gromov-Witten invariants, and also for homogeneous varieties. So it's a pretty special case, but still, even in this very special case, there is a lot of things that can be done and can be asked. Okay. So how can we compute them? So in the case of the Grassmannian, so if X is a Grassmannian, and in fact even some Grassmannians in types BCD, so some in BCD, so the maximal isotopic Grassmannians in types BCD also, there are also formulas to compute this, so there are many algorithms. These algorithms started by considering quantum Pieri formulae, quantum Giambelli formula, there is a Riemhoek algorithm, there is this toric tableau approach of Pasnikov, there is the connection with two-step flag manifolds. So I'm just going very quickly over some algorithms. But really, what you should remember from this is that you can compute these things in many ways if X is a Grassmannian. So many algorithms. Also, if X, or if G is, well, I really want my G to be PGLN. Not SLM, okay? So in type A. So in type A also, this also can be done. So there are Pieri and Giambelli formulae, and I'm going to explain a little bit about this. So this is, maybe I'm going to emphasize a little bit more this case. So this is Chocan-Fontanin and Fomin-Gelfand-Pasnikov. So what is a Pieri formula? So there are some generators for the quantum cohomology in type A. Is the GLN modulo the center? Is the projective, is the adjoint form of SLM? is matrices modulo scalars. So matrices in, you know, in GLN modulo scalars. Anyway, if you're not happy with this SLN, it's okay. It's a, just a technical thing. SLN, GLN, even GLN, it's okay. Everything. Okay. It's just a technical thing. That doesn't really play a role in this talk. Okay. So a Pierre formula means that you know how to multiply by a generator, and a Giambelli formula tells you how to write a Schubert class as a polynomial in the generators. Okay. So once you know a Pierre formula, and once you know a Giambelli formula, in theory, you can multiply any two Schubert classes. So this is why this problem is solved. I mean, not positively solved, so there is no positive formula for these coefficients. However, in theory, this is solved. No, I want the root lattice to be the same thing as the weight lattice, but that's a technical. So. Okay, so what can happen in other types than type A? So in other types, so what can you do in other types? Well, not very much. So in other types, I said something about Grassmannians in other types, but essentially except for the Grassmannians, you can't do much. So what you can do, however, you have a chance to do something in the case P equals to B. So P, if P is a Borel subgroup, in that case, there is a Chevalet formula. So there is a Chevalet formula. Now, what is a Chevalet formula? A Chevalet formula is a formula to multiply a quantum Schubert class by a divisor class. So the divisor classes, remember, the divisor classes are indexed by the simple rules. Okay. So there is a formula here. This Chevalet formula was conjectured by Peterson and was proved by Fulton and Woodward. In fact, the Chevalet formula was proved in the biggest generality, so for G mod P, not only in G mod B. Okay, but the point is that in the case when P is equal to B, these divisor classes generate the cohomology. So this is important. So if divisor classes are note sigma s alpha I, where alpha is in, well, now it's just in delta because delta P is, they generate to H upper star of G mod B. Okay, so you in principle at this moment you can stop and you can say that if I employ a computer program I can still compute. Since I know how to multiply by generators, maybe I need a presentation which was in fact done by Kim, and then I can compute invariants. However, there is a Giambelli formula. There is a Giambelli formula. In fact, there is an algorithm for the Giambelli formula. I don't know if Liviu will agree or not. It's not precise Giambelli formula, but an algorithm for it. Yeah, so it's a matter of definition. Okay. And which writes sigma w as a polynomial in the generators. Okay? And this is due to Liviu. Okay? So
he has shown that given the monotone, you can deduce the Giambelli polynomial expression in algorithm.
In general type?
For G mod B, sure.
Okay.
It's just a combinatorial statement about the algorithm.
Okay. Okay, I wasn't aware of that. Okay. Okay. Well, let's consider Fomin quoted. So. Okay. So now you have a Giambelli formula. You have a way to multiply by a generator. So in principle, you can actually compute all these invariants. Okay. Now the question that remains is But what in the most general case? So what about the most general case? I don't know if you finished writing. Okay. So in the most general case, the situation is much more complicated. Well, it's simple in a way and it's complicated in a different way. So for general case, so the general case is just x equals g mod p, where p is just any parabolic. What can you do? So, well, there is no Jambelli, no known Jambelli. No known multiplication by generators. That means no Pieri. Really, Pieri is a type A thing, but I'm gonna abuse that name. So what can you do? Yes. Okay, constant polynomial. It's equivariant, so also classical. Yes. Yes. But in G mod, yeah, the question remains in G mod B, yes. Yeah, so that's a very good point, in fact. Thank you. So, you know, quantum cohomology is not functorial. So it's not like if you know the things on G mod B, you will know them on G mod P. So that's a very important remark. So quantum cohomology is not functorial. Okay? So still, the only thing that is known up to date that would approach this problem is a so-called Peterson comparison formula. There is no functoriality, but there is some kind of, maybe not functoriality, but some kind of relating the things that happen on GMAP P with those on GMAP B. And this is by Peterson comparison formula. And what does this formula say? So it says that if you take a Gromov-Witten invariant, which is Gromov-Witten invariant, so this is going to be Gromov-Witten on QH upper star of G mod P. Okay? This formula says that this Gromov-Witten invariant is going to be equal with the Gromov-Witten invariant, say, U prime, V prime, W prime, D prime. And this Gromov-Witten invariant is going to be a Gromov-Witten invariant on QH upper star of G mod B. And there is a precise way to obtain W prime out of W, D prime out of D, and so on. So the formula is explicit. Okay? This formula, in fact, was proved by Woodward, by Chris Woodward. It was conjectured by Peterson as many things in this domain. But it was proved by Woodward. Okay? So this is the only thing known up to date for computing Gromov-Witten invariants on GMAP-P. Now, what I promise you in this talk is that there is, in fact, another way. And that other way will avoid the Jambelli formulas, will avoid the multiplication by generators, and will avoid the comparison formula. For computing this Gromov-Witten invariants on GMAP-P. And this approach is using an equivariant version of the quantum cohomology, which is called equivariant quantum cohomology. And this is the main topic of this talk. Okay. What's that? I don't know. I mean, it was used first by Giventhal and Kim in 95 and 96 to recover presentations for the quantum cohomology of partial flag manifold in type A. So it was used before, but it wasn't really used to actually give algorithms to compute Gromov-Witten invariants. So it's not such a novel idea, but it's a different way to approach these problems, which avoids all these technical difficulties. Yes. Okay. Well, in order to start with equivariant quantum cohomology, I'm going to start talking about equivariant cohomology. And in fact, just to simplify notations, I'm going to stick myself to the Grassmannian. All the results I'm going to talk about are going to be true for G mod P, but I'm just going to stick myself to the Grassmannian because it's much easier to write expressions and formula with the Grassmannian. So from now on, X is going to be the Grassmannian of P planes in CM. Okay. The indexing set of the Schubert varieties is the same thing as can be identified with partitions, lambda 1 up to lambda p, included in p times n minus p rectangle. And one can also define Schubert varieties. So if you want to define the Schubert variety, you have to fix a flag. And I'm going to fix, in fact, the standard flag. And it is important in equivariant problems to which flag are you fixing, because the equivariant classes will depend on the flag that you consider. Okay, so you fix a flag, and then you have a Schubert variety with respect to this fixed flag. And this is a classical definition. So is the subspaces in the Grassmannian that intersect this flag in a given attitude, which is determined by lambda. So the dimension of V with F of M minus P, so this is the definition. Okay? That's the definition of the Schubert variety in the Grassmannian case. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about equivariant cohomology. I said, we've seen in Linda's talk yesterday, I guess, that the equivariant cohomology is an algebra over the equivariant cohomology of the point. So equivariant cohomology, equivariant with respect to what? So again, now I'm going to change a little bit the things, and I'm going to say that the torus, which if I said that it's PGLN or PGLN, then I should say that this thing acts on the Grassmannian. Okay? And it's really with respect to this torus. So it's really C star to the N that acts on X, but the central direction, as Megumi said several times, doesn't do anything. Okay. So this is a lambda algebra, where lambda is the equivariant cohomology of the point. Okay, and I want to write this as follows. Z of T1 minus T2, I should have considered C star to the N now. So this Ti minus Ti minus 1, they should correspond, in fact, for positivity reasons, they will correspond to the minus positive simpler root. Okay? So they should be the minus positive simpler root, not the positive. Okay, and it has a lambda basis, which consists of equivariant Schubert classes, where lambda is included in this P times N minus P rectangle. And this class is really the class which is determined by the Schubert variety, defined with respect to the standard flag. And this class has degree twice the weight of lambda, where the weight of lambda is the sum of the parts of lambda. Okay, so you have a partition, you draw a Young diagram, and then you count the boxes of the Young diagram of the partition, and then you get the weight of lambda. Okay. And the multiplication, So the multiplication in equivariant cohomology. So if you take two Schubert classes, equivariant Schubert classes, and if you multiply them, you get some coefficients, but now these coefficients are going to be in the structure ring, and the structure ring is the polynomial ring. Okay? So C lambda nu nu of T is going to be a homogeneous polynomial in lambda of degree, well, if you look at the grading, you will see that the degree is the weight of lambda plus weight of mu minus weight of nu. Right, if you just look at the grading. Okay? Any questions so far? Okay, so now it's the weighted moment when we can talk a little bit about the equivariant quantum cohomology. Yes. It's not clear what they mean. I'm not aware of any geometrical interpretation of this thing. So this is a polynomial. By a theorem of Graham, in fact, is a polynomial in T1 minus T2 and so on with non-negative coefficients. This was conjectured again by Peterson, was proved by Graham. In the case of the Grassmannian, there is a formula of Allen involving puzzles, but I'm not aware of any geometrical interpretation. So oh no, so Graham proves this is geometrical.
Yeah, but still there is no geometric explanation, yeah?
But the book is geometric, but... Okay. Yeah, it's not clear why it's no geometrical explanation of those coefficients. Okay, so we've seen that the quantum cohomology was, in fact... remember, in the case of the Grassmannian, I have only one divisor class. And the divisor class is the one which is so only one divisor class. So let me put it here. Maybe or here. One divisor class. Okay, which is sigma box D, because I'm in the equivariant case, okay? So I don't have many divisor classes. So the quantum cohomology was a Z of Q algebra. The equivariant cohomology was a lambda algebra. Now you would expect that the equivariant quantum cohomology, so this is going to be, it's going to be denoted by QH upper star T of X, and it's going to be a graded, well, if you combine Z of Q with lambda, then you get lambda of Q if you tensor it. So you get the lambda of Q algebra. Okay? I said it's graded, so the degree of Q is equal to M, and the M is the one from the Grassmannian, so it's the Grassmannian of P planes in Cn. Okay, and it has a basis, I'm telling you about the additive structure of the equivariant quantum cohomology. It has a lambda Q basis, I'm going to call this basis Schubert basis. It's really a basis which is obtained by manipulating using some moduli spaces the equivariant Schubert classes. So you can safely call it Schubert basis. Okay, and this describes the additive structure of the equivariant quantum cohomology. So the additive structure is very, very easy, right? We have a free module, which is a finely generated free module. So nothing so fancy so far. But the multiplication is more interesting. So if you want to multiply, so I'm going to denote the multiplication by a circle, a small circle. So if you're multiplying two basis elements, so somehow this formula resembles the formula from the quantum case. So this is going to be a sum from Q to the D, C lambda nu, nu D of T, times sigma nu. And so, of course, the question is this, right? What are those? Those are the structure constants. The multiplication is determined by some polynomials. So these are polynomials, these are in fact homogeneous polynomials in lambda. Okay, so t1 minus t2, tm minus 1 minus tm. Okay. And if you count the degree, so the polynomial degree, so you see there are really two degrees here. There is this degree d, which doesn't have anything to do with the polynomial degree, because this is also a polynomial. Okay, that degree is for degree d curves, and this degree that I'm talking about is the polynomial degree. So it's going to be weight of lambda plus weight of mu minus mp. This is just by counting that. And these are the equivariant, Gromov-Witten invariants, which were introduced by Giventhal and King. If you want to see the geometrical definition of these invariants, maybe we can discuss afterwards. I'm just going to remark that the definition is very similar to the ordinary Gromov-Witten invariant, but you replace all the classes by equivariant classes, and at some moment you have to replace the dual class in usual cohomology with the dual class in equivariant cohomology, which you have to compute what it is, because in equivariant cohomology really the duality is more a little bit more complicated, but not very complicated. Okay? No. No, there is a Poincaré pairing. You know, it's again, it's what do you mean by a Poincaré duality? So there is a pairing, you have a basis, you have a dual basis. If you pair any element from a basis with any element from the dual basis, you get the delta operator, delta lambda. So it's like a Poincaré duality. So yeah. Okay. Let me give you an example. So let's compute this. Okay? The equivariant quantum cohomology of P2. And for that I really have to look in here because okay, so P2 should be regarded again as important as the Grassmannian of lines in C3. Okay? So the degree of Q equal to 3, and I have the partitions 0 box and 2 boxes. So the Schubert varieties are indexed by these partitions. Okay. Now let me give you the multiplication of each of these. Of course, if you multiply by 0, 0 is going to be the unit element, so there is nothing interesting if you multiply by 0, but let's see, if you multiply by box by box, well, first of all, you can see that you shouldn't get any q's in there because box times box has degree 2 and q has degree 3. So this should be just an equivariant computation here. And if you work it out, is this. T2 minus T3 sigma box. Okay? If you multiply box by double box, well, there is a chance, as the meteorologists say, there is a slight chance for a Q in this one. Yeah. So, and in fact, that slight chance materializes here. And this is, that's our Q. And there is no place for mixed terms. And what do I mean by mixed terms? So mixed term is a term where both Q and T appear. So any term with both Q and T will have degree at least 4, because Q has degree 3 and T has degree 1. So there are no mixed terms here. Okay? Well, let's see if that happens at this computation. Okay, so here there is a chance for a mixed term, a slight chance, or who knows. Okay, let's see if we get it or not. So first the equivariant part, sigma double box. Then there is the quantum part, and unfortunately there is a mixed term. So there is a mixed term here. So if anybody was hoping that the equivariant quantum cohomology is really a very boring combination of equivariant and quantum cohomology, the hopes are gone at this moment, even for P2, which is a pretty simple case. Okay, so what can we do? So it may be, so it looks like equivariant quantum cohomology, at least for P2, looks interesting. So let's see. Okay, so the first result is a theorem which computes the product with a divisor class. And I'm going to tell you in a moment. So this is the Pierre-Richevallet, or the equivariant quantum Pierre-Richevallet formula. Okay, so this takes a Schubert class and multiplies it with a divisor class. And you get the classical sum. You get the equivariant part. You get the quantum part. But somehow, miraculously, you don't get the mixed part. So in the equivariant quantum Chevallet rule, you don't get any mixed terms. I'm going to explain in a moment what all these symbols mean, lambda minus, and what is this coefficient, and what this arrow means. But before going there, what I'm saying is that there are no mixed terms in here, and so why would we care? Well, we would care because we will see that the equivariant quantum Pierre-Richevallet rule would be enough to compute all the structure constants. So just starting from this computation, and the divisor class does not generate the equivariant quantum cohomology. So. In fact, this multiplication generalizes for any G mod P, and in that case also there are no mixed terms. So the equivariant quantum Pierre-Richevallet rule doesn't have any mixed terms in any homogeneous space. Okay, let me explain you what these symbols mean. So mu dominates lambda means essentially that mu is larger than lambda by one box. So this means that lambda is included in mu. And the weight of mu is the weight of lambda plus 1. Okay? And of course, mu should be in the P times M minus P rectangle, and because this is how the Schubert classes are indexed. Then this equivariant term. And so there is a formula for this equivariant term in the Grassmannian. There is a formula for this equivariant term in any flag variety. That formula, I guess. Maybe first is Constantin Kummer and then Billy. I don't remember exactly. So there is a precise formula. In this case, it's this formula. In any case, this is Tm minus P plus I minus lambda I minus. So it's very concrete. Besides the technicalities, the idea that term is very concrete and you know what it is. So that's, and lambda minus. Okay, for lambda minus, where lambda minus is obtained from lambda by removing M minus 1 boxes from the border ring. And I'm going to draw a figure and I'm going to show you what do I mean by bordering, and I'll show you an example. Okay, so let me show you an example of that. So what is the bordering and how do you remove the boxes there? Okay, so suppose P equals 2, N equals 4, so this is an example. And suppose I have the full rectangle in there. Okay. Now the border rim is the set of boxes from the Young diagram that intersects the southeast border of the Young diagram. So in this case, the border rim is gonna be this. Okay. So if you remove it, you are left with that. Okay. So that's the border rim. Okay. And by the way, in the case, in the G mod P case, the formula for that quantum term comes from the quantum Chevalier formula of Peterson and then Fulton and Woodward. So it's known in that case too. Okay, so any questions so far? Because I'm gonna, I guess, go to the algorithm. Using associativity. Yeah, no. Using associativity. So, you know, if you have the quantum cohomology and if you're patient enough and if you compute things. So what do you know? You know that there is this product that specializes to the quantum product and equivariant product. And there are some other terms which you don't know what they are. But then you can use associativity relations. And you can actually compute by hand a few examples. So. Well, I mean, there are algorithms for counting curves in the...
Yeah, but we didn't do that.
No. Well, I don't know what curves to count because... Yeah, so there is... I don't know what curve would I count. Yeah. Okay. So, I'm going to state a corollary, which is, in fact, a weaker result of what's happening, but it's going to be enough for most of the applications. So what I said before is that the equivariant quantum Pierre-Chevalier rule determines the equivariant quantum cohomology ring. And now the question is, what do I mean by determines? So let's consider some arbitrary algebra. I'm going to make this very formal. So this is going to be a lambda Q algebra, graded lambda Q algebra. which is commutative. Okay. Now, since I said it's algebra, it's also associative. So, in the most general case, I will not require, in fact, associativity. But, such that. So it has. So, one. It has a lambda Q basis. Say S lambda. Where lambda is included as usual in the P times the minus V. Okay? So such that the additive structure is the same as the additive structure of the equivariant quantum cohomology. And two, such that if I multiply S lambda in this product, in this rhombus product, with a divisor class, then this is given by, equivariant quantum, I called it Pierre-Chevalier. Okay? So if you multiply these two, you're going to have the same formula as there, but with sigmas replaced by S's. Then, it's not a good idea. So then there exists a canonical isomorphism. So there exists a canonical isomorphism of this algebra with the equivariant quantum cohomology. Okay. So if I have some algebra for which the equivariant quantum Pierre-Chevalier rule holds, then in fact is my equivariant quantum cohomology algebra. Okay. I'm going to just sketch very briefly the idea of the proof. Really, the proof is by an algorithm. And it's by an algorithm which is effective and you can implement, you can write a program and you can let the computer compute. Does not generate, yes. This is not so amazing if in this equivariant cohomology. I mean, this... That's true. So, as long as you go to some equivariant cohomology, this should happen, or a version of it. This is already true in non-quantum ordinary equivariant cohomology. So if you have some algebra for which the equivariant Chevalier rule holds, then that algebra must in fact be the equivariant cohomology. And that was the thing that was used by Allen, by Knudsen, and by Tao when they proved their puzzle formula for the Grassmannian. So So that was the observation, that if you this Chevalier-Ruhl actually gives you some recurrence relations, and using those recurrence relations you can actually compute all the coefficients. And what they proved is that their puzzle satisfied those recurrence relations. So that means that their puzzle actually represent the equivariant Little-Richardson parameters. No, just for the Grassmannian. So, yeah. Oh yeah, no, this is true for G mod P, but their puzzles only work for the Grassmannian. Okay, so the idea of proof. So you start with, I said, with an associativity equation. Okay, and you work it out. So you know, you expand those terms. You're using the Chevalier rule. And what you get at the end is the following thing. It's the circle. Sorry? Really, what I'm proving here is that using the Chevalier rule, you can get some recurrence relations. And once you prove that those recurrence relations determine all the coefficients, doesn't matter which operation you're using. But you're perfectly right. I should have used the Romulus there just to be very precise. Okay, so the thing is that if you work it out, now I'm going to write a little bit more technical formula, but this is the recurrence, so it's worth to be seen. Okay, so what's going to be in the... And in fact, this is a generalization of the recurrence which was obtained by Knudsen and Taro in the quantum case. This is a generalization to this quantum case of their equivariant recurrence. So this is delta goes to lambda. Okay, and nu goes to epsilon, and everything should be of t. And this should be, that happens. I'm not done yet, but I want to stop here just for a second to tell you that if d would be equal to zero, this is precisely the recurrence relation that was used in proving the Basel formula. So that's the equivariant part, and now comes the quantum part, the quantum correction, if you want. So there should be some terms which modify this. So c lambda nu nu d minus 1 of t minus... Okay, so I'm going to write it like that. So it's the same thing as here. C lambda so that should actually come here, but I apologize for that. Over the same thing, so same. So that term should have been there. Yes, this is a lambda minus here. This is a lambda minus here. And this is a new plus. And I'm going to explain what they are. That's right. Yes. So lambda minus, we've seen what lambda minus is. Now, new plus is the only thing if exists in the P times M minus C rectangle such that when you take the minus of it, you recover the initial partition. So essentially, instead of removing boxes, you're adding boxes. Okay. Of course, in the Chevalier formula, if lambda minus does not exist, then that term is ignored. And in these formulas also, if lambda minus or nu plus does not exist in the P times M minus C rectangle, you just ignore the terms. Okay? Okay, so now what's recurrent about this formula? Well, first of all, you can see that this last part, so this part, is better because it has d minus 1 instead of d. So that's better. Okay, but what about this part? So what about that part? Well, if you compute the degree, if you compute the polynomial degree of each such term, you will see that the polynomial degree of this, of all these terms here, of this term and this term, is one more than the polynomial degree of this. So what does this mean is that you can imagine, and I'm not giving you really the details, but you can imagine some double induction on D and on polynomial degree. So some double induction. So it's going to be ascending on D, and descending on polynomial degree. So really I have to take the top term for the polynomial degree and show that somehow that gets better. But it can be done if you work it out. I'm not going to give you the details. Okay? Yeah, so the base case is D is equal to 0. And at the moment when D is equal to 0, you take the maximum polynomial degree. Let me just take the basic base case. So the base case is D is equal to 0. And once you're in the case that D is equal to 0, you should look at the term of the maximum polynomial degree. And that term is, in fact, full rectangle, m minus b. 0, right? This coefficient will have maximum polynomial degree because you have to have the maximum partitions downstairs and the least partition upstairs. And now this is if D is equal to 0, this is going to be equal to 0, for example, because this is not including that. But if D is not equal to 0, suppose I just have some D. So what happens if I have some D there? I look at the first term. So delta goes to lambda. Is there any delta which is larger than the full rectangle? There is not. I look at the second term. Is there any epsilon which is smaller than the zero partition? There is not. So these terms are erased. And so there are only these terms which have degree d minus 1. So the maximal term goes to d minus 1, and I'm done by induction. Okay, so, and I'm kind of lying a little bit, because what happens if lambda is equal to nu? Okay, now if lambda is equal to nu, I'm going to switch nu and lambda by commutativity. But what happens if lambda is equal to mu is equal to nu? Okay, in that case, for the equivariant cohomology, there was a formula. You can prove it by localization, for example. It's the product of some weights. So there is a formula in equivariant cohomology. However, I am not aware of any formula in equivariant quantum cohomology. And I computed some terms and they look pretty wild. However, you can still use this recurrence in a different way, so there is a different procedure, so that you can recover the C lambda 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 D. So you can still compute that term. Okay, I'm not going to give you. If you want to discuss, we can discuss afterwards. Okay, I have 2 minutes left, so maybe to convince a little bit the combinatorialists that this should also have a nice combinatorial formula, I'm going to give you the following result. So there is another theorem. Okay. So, of course, you can see from this thing that I shouldn't expect any positivity properties from this algorithm, right? I have minuses all over the place. If you compute, you can see that this coefficient should have any positivity properties. However, so there is a result that says that this coefficient is in fact a polynomial in this t1 minus t2, tm minus 1 minus tm, with non-negative coefficients. And in the case d is equal to 0, the credit should be done. So for d equals to 0, really this was conjectured by Peterson and proved by Graham. And then this extends the result. Okay, so that means that there is a chance for a nice combinatorial, nice positive combinatorial formula for this, and maybe there are some puzzles. And in fact, there is a conjecture for some puzzles, just for the Grassmannian, for these numbers, and it's a conjecture that generalizes a conjecture of Buch, Kresh, and Tanvakis, also about some puzzles. And I'm not going to say more about this, but that's about it. Thank you.